Alliance Physical Therapy Partners and Agile Virtual Physical Therapy proudly present Agile and Me, a physical therapy leadership podcast devised to help emerging and experienced therapy leaders learn more about various topics relevant to outpatient therapy services.
Welcome back to Agile Me, a physical therapy leadership podcast series. I'm Richard Lever, your host, and today I'm excited to welcome Mark Setlock. And Mark is our Director of Payer Relations for Alliance Physical Therapy Partners. So welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you very much, Richard. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. So this is going to be a series of podcasts because everyone is very excited about payer relations, obviously. So I thought that there's enough information for a number of podcasts. So if you're listening, then excited to welcome you to not only listen to the first one, but to later episodes as well. But before we do that, Mark, I'd love for you to perhaps introduce yourself to the listening audience in regards to your background and experience as it pertains to payer relations.
Sure. So I started in payer relations back in the hospital level, an academic medical center. And that got me to see the both sides of the physicians and the hospital contracting. And directly from there, I jumped into PT and spent the last 15 or so years working at various PT companies, pediatric and outpatient physical therapy, and even spent a little bit of time on the payer side just to see how great it was over there. So
you were on the dark side then?
I was for a very short time, yes.
We'll forgive you. So 15 years, that's a lot of experience within the PT space. So excited to chat with you, given your experience within this sector. So I think in this episode, what I'd really like to do is just explore the real basics, because from my perspective, and I'm sure many of our emerging and existing leaders within the PT space, payer relations is somewhat of a dark art, and you know, there's a lot to know about it to understand it, one, and two, to be actually, I think, impact our relationships with payers. So if we can start really at the beginning, and you know, we talk about payer relations, we're really talking about payer contracts, I think, primarily. So why do we even have contracts with payers?
Well, I believe we have the payer contracts because it allows the payers to have some sort of direct involvement in the healthcare space. So the payer contracts are really just legal documents that the health insurance companies sign with providers. And the payers are collecting the premiums from the members under the promise that they're going to pay for their healthcare. And so I think it was an opportunity for payers to inject their spin on healthcare and to kind of help dictate the direction of patient care.
So essentially, very basic level, it's a contract between the provider and the insured, essentially.
Correct.
Yep. They are the third party really entity that is bonds that relationship. And the contract essentially stipulates, and we'll go into this in more detail, I'm sure, later, with regards to, you know, how it's provided, you know, the terms of the provision. I assume it includes a lot more things as well. So contracting has been around for a long period of time, correct?
Yes, it has.
So did this start for a specific reason, or do you have any historical context to perhaps contracting? Because you know, I only came to the States about two decades ago, but I'm sure that there is more to this with regards to contracting. Yes.
Yeah. So I think the ultimate goal of the contracts is to lower cost to the members, and so I think that this really picked up steam, managed care really picked up steam kind of in the 80s and 90s with employer groups giving that as a benefit to their employees. And so this kind of grew out of that, I believe. And so the payer is promising to lower the cost, the ever ballooning cost of healthcare for the members. And the members are getting that benefit from their employer. And the employer early on was paying the bulk of the premiums on their behalf. And then over time and in recent years, it's the costs have shifted to more to the patient. and the patient has more out of pocket, more deductibles, more co-insurance needed than it used to. But I think that that kind of started in the 80s, 90s, I believe.
That's really interesting, the concept that the payer, the insurance company, was supposedly there to reduce cost. And I would imagine pretty much ever since, the cost of health insurance has gone up in excess of inflation. But we'll unravel that, I'm sure, at a later date.
That's a very astute observation.
So as providers, as a clinician, when a patient comes in, it's this concept of patients will say, well, are you in or out of network with my insurance? What does that mean for, what does it mean if one is in network or out of network? And what are the consequences perhaps associated with that a little bit?
Certainly. So when a provider is considered in network, that means that they've signed a contract, a legal document, to be able to provide care at a set rate for the payer's members. If the provider is considered out of network, that means that they have no contract with the member's payer. And so therefore, there are no additional rules. There are no rate restrictions outside of the government restrictions that may be there. But it means that the provider is free to treat the patient and expect up to their full billed charges for reimbursement.
So essentially, what one is agreeing to as a provider is a set amount of reimbursement. So let's say, you know, the insurance company will give $100 for the visit. So it doesn't really matter what the provider's bill is. It will actually be set at $100. So there is the benefit. There are benefits with being in network, and we'll talk about those. But essentially, it theoretically guarantees a set amount for a set service. And then I assume from the patient's perspective, it really gives them confidence, all being well, that they will know exactly what the price of their care is based off a negotiated contract between the payer and the provider. Yes?
That is correct. So the out-of-pocket coming from the patient would be or could be very substantially less in an in-network relationship versus an out-of-network relationship.
And I think in other areas of healthcare, this is often cited as an issue because patients don't necessarily know when they go to other types of healthcare if the provider is in-network or out-of-network. And there isn't necessarily that level of transparency. And in hospitals, I know that you can actually have people, providers that are out of network within a facility that is in network. And it can get very confusing for patients, can't it?
Yes, it can.
But for therapy, I have a feeling, and I believe that majority of therapy providers verify benefits for patients and provide that information to patients if they are in or at least in or out of network. Is that accurate to say?
Yes. Generally, there's patient counseling that happens at the clinic level or perhaps at the billing level. But they're explaining the therapy teammates are explaining to the patient, they're verifying their benefits online and explaining to the patient that this should be covered under in-network rates. And certainly, it's always up to the patient to know what their in-network rates are. But as a service, a lot of PT providers will call or check online and give the patient the parameters of their coverage. And in some cases, would be able to explain what kind of a cost estimate the patient should expect to pay per visit.
I've always found it interesting, the fact that outpatient therapy providers, on the whole, within the US, essentially verify whether somebody is in and out of network and even possibly give some more additional information. And I've always wondered why we do that, because other healthcare providers, it's really up to the patient to understand their coverage, insurance plan, and go and look for themselves whether they're in or out of network, or actively seek that out rather than being given the information. Is that accurate? And if it is, why do you think, this is a tough question, why do you think that therapy feels obligated to do the work of what really the patient should be doing?
Well, I think it's a way for the therapy industry to provide a service to the patient, because I think that the industry as a whole feels kind of attacked on having to justify rates, having to justify the reimbursement or the patient out of pocket, or justifying to the patient why they need to come 12 visits to get fully healed as opposed to the 8 that the payer has provided. So I think when we're discussing between hospital systems and outpatient therapy, I think the big difference is that the hospital industry gets higher rates on average because they provide a lot more different disciplines and a lot more, they control a lot more of the market. So they have a lot more leverage than the PT industry has. So I think this is a way that the PT providers can show an added value to their services and comfort the patient and alleviate any stress that the patient may have about coming to physical therapy after having their surgery provider working on them.
Now, many providers, outpatient therapy providers, are in network. Again, in a later episode, we can talk about what's happening perhaps at that at a larger level more recently as it pertains to being deciding to be in or out of network. But over the years, I think there has been a gradual transition of providers from being out of network to in network. If I talk at a kind of a very high level, whether that will continue is yet to be discussed. But there's got to be advantages, I assume. What are the advantages of being in network for the patient and for the provider? And we touched on the patient already, but what are the advantages?
Right. So for the patient specifically would be they would know who in their neighborhood could be able to treat them under their in-network rates. So that means that they could expect to have a lot less of an out-of-pocket payment. Their deductibles would be much less and the co-insurance could be much less than, and we're talking to the tune of several thousand dollars for an episode of care. So that's the advantage for the patient, less money out of pocket for them. The advantage for the provider is that your referrals can send patients to you without having to know, are they in network or out of network? So the main advantage for a provider to be in network is to continue to see a stream of patients that they don't have to worry about getting additional authorizations, or they don't need to perhaps justify each and every visit that they're doing or service that they're providing. And it's a smoother transition. They may not have to wait as long for payment from the payers. It'll be a lesser payment, but more than likely, they're not going to have to fight over each and every nickel from that in-network payer. They can expect to get paid relatively quickly in a timely manner.
Again, in my simplistic mind, when I boil it down, the primary benefit, as I see, is a balance between volume and price, ultimately for the provider. Right. If you're in network, you possibly have access to a larger patient population, a pool of patients that are willing and prepared to come to see you, but you have to sacrifice for the rate. You probably aren't going to get reimbursed as much ultimately. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're likely to get reimbursed a little less, if not significantly less, than if you had seen that patient out of network, if the patient had been prepared to be seen out of network. Yes.
Yeah. So you're exactly right. So out of network billing, you could get up to your charge, billed charges. So you get 100% of billed charges. Under an in-network contract, you're limiting your ability to get that 100%, and it might be knocked down to either a flat rate for that visit, or it could be a percentage of Medicare or a percentage of a fee schedule. So it's very important to figure out what kind of reimbursement you're giving up for the benefit of seeing that patient. And just to add to that, one of the benefits is that you don't need to talk an out-of-network patient into coming to you in money. So you have to justify to the patient that you need to, that the reason that they should be coming to you is because of the great outcome that they can expect, but it's going to cost them money. So I think that's a key point here, is that being out of network makes your job harder to ensure that that patient feels comfortable based on the amount of money that's going to come out of pocket for them to come and have you treat them.
Now, having said that, there's nothing stopping a patient and there's nothing stopping a provider from seeing people who are out of network. It's just, so if a patient particularly wants to see a therapist A, because they've heard great things about them, even if therapist is out of network, the therapist can still see them. It's just the fact that the patient is likely to be responsible for a higher financial burden, essentially. Yes.
Yes, that's correct. Because it's always up to the patient where they get their care from, but it's up to the payer to decide how much of that care is going to be covered by the payer or covered by the insured.
At Alliance, we believe that partnership means creating something greater than the sum of its parts. Our focus is finding physical therapy practices with a strong culture and thriving community, and providing them with additional tools, resources, and expertise to take their practice to the next level. To learn more about joining our nationwide community of outpatient physical therapy practices, visit our website at alliancepTP.com.
So we talked a little bit about the advantages, but as we well know, there's always a different side to the coin, isn't there? Particularly when it comes to kind of payers. So what are the key disadvantages of being in network for the provider and for the patient?
So the biggest disadvantage of becoming in network is that whenever you sign a contract, and this is true for any contract that you're signing, you're limiting your options based on whatever's written in that contract. So the big things that you're going to be giving up is the freedom to really direct the care and come up with what you feel is the best care that's going to get covered by signing a contract that the payer is always going to be involved in, having you need to justify whatever treatment you've given, whatever codes you've been able to bill, whatever modifiers that they require on the claim form. The contract will also limit the reimbursement. You wouldn't be able to, or generally not going to be able to, get your 100% of your billed charges. It'll be a reduced rate. And so those are the big things. And then anytime, like I said, whenever you're signing a contract, you're limiting yourself. So if you can treat outside of a contract, you can dictate the care much better than being in network with something.
So bottom line is you are not only accepting a limited or a reduced reimbursement rate for the potential of having a larger pool of patients seeking services from your location and facility, but you're really giving up a lot of control, and you're really allowing the payer to, I don't know if this is the right word, police you and dictate under contract law the terms and conditions in which you provide that care. Yes,
that's exactly right. And throughout the contract, some of these contracts are very, very wordy and a lot of pages. And each of those clauses in there restrict what you can do freely just based on the Practice Act and your state for the license and the care and the services you're able to provide. Contracts really limit that rather than, enhance any of that. So when you're signing a contract, you have to make sure that you're really looking into that contract and making sure that that's the right thing to sign for your practice.
So ultimately, apart from perhaps guaranteeing, apart from the idea that certain amount of volume or referrals will be sent to you as a provider, I can't really see any advantage of being in network for the provider.
Right. Yes. And you're exactly right for that. And so the benefit for the provider to be in network is really enjoyed by the member themselves in a lower cost structure. I guess you could say that it makes referring to an outpatient therapy provider easier for the primary care, because they don't need to keep a list to know who they can send and can't send to particular providers. So therefore, it streamlines that process, but you are giving up a lot when you're signing up a contract.
And the other thing which we've kind of touched on with regards to what a contract contains is, it's not only the reimbursement side, it's also more and more the administrative component to the patient as well, management of the patient. So being in network ties you to certain requirements, be that authorization, be that proving medical necessity, be that providing certain information, clinical information on a certain frequency, be that undertaking credentialing requirements, both for the clinician, for the clinic, for the business. It's stacked on, isn't it, within the contract? It is. And it's not just, we often think, well, it's just, okay, we've got to accept a lower reimbursement rate, but it's a lower reimbursement rate with administrative burden that is in excess of what one would normally do for an out-of-network patient, correct?
That is correct. And even some stuff that can go back, up to, a year or two in the past, when you're signing certain contracts, and depending on the clauses within those contracts, it allows for payers in cases to audit past treatment, past visits, and then say, you know what, you owe me money back, and go back, 16 months to collect money from you. So that's one of the things you need to really be sure that you're reading through the contracts and making sure that there isn't anything that can hurt you in the end. Because if you're out of network, then usually once it's paid, it's paid, based on the voluntary payment doctrine that states that if you haven't signed a contract, that if you're out of network, what has been paid on behalf of the patient and that's been accepted by you is what is truly what was paid, and they can't go back and take any of that money back from you.
Yeah, and going kind of to the plumber analogy, which we often use because I think it's quite interesting to do it. So it's this concept that plumber comes in, changes your heating system, mends the water pipe or whatever it is, provides the service, fixes it. The patient is happy with the clinical care they have, but potentially due to some administrative rule, be that length of time to submit the claim, or be that the fact that there's a chart audit and it's deemed by a non-clinician that it wasn't medically necessary, based off the actual documentation rather than actually what the patient received in care, they can say, oh, actually, we're just going to take all that money back now, even though the patient's probably happy and they had a successful course of care. The payer themselves can just, take it back, and you've got basically no recourse associated with it, yes?
Yes, that's exactly right. So in your analogy, that means that the plumber has already paid for all those pipes that they put in, all the tape that they use, and they can't balance bill the patient. They can't get any of their money back. And so they've spent all this money and they can't see anything, any benefit from it.
And then, of course, with this analogy, if we take it one step further, then the payer actually gives that money back to the patient, correct?
That is correct. Yes. Yes.
So if there is a competitive market and if there is a limited supply of patients, I can see an incentive of being in network to a certain extent. It's really how much are you prepared to sacrifice in order to attract the patient, or be a provider of choice as it pertains to the payer. And I think in the past, I can see that, and for certain geographies, I can see the appeal of that. Is that, is it, Are you sensing any changes as it pertains to providers moving in or out of network? I think there's some kind of push-pull with this, isn't there? I don't think it's a simple answer. So tell me a little bit about what's been going on the perhaps the last few years, and then more recently, perhaps.
Yeah, so I think that with the ever-present threat of declining reimbursement, I think the industry as a whole, PT, outpatient PT providers as a whole, are just getting fed up. And they can't, they're starting to realize that I'm giving this care, my costs are escalating every month or every year with inflation, and I'm getting dinged on the back end where my reimbursement is dropping every year. Premium dollars for the payers are continuing to increase above the inflation rate. So we're getting the wrong part of the axe here, because we're paying more to provide the care to the members and give good care, but we're getting less money to do so. So I think providers in general, outpatient providers in general, are seeing that this is an unsustainable model for them, and that they need to really call their provider, their payer contracts, and go with the ones that are being very, very good in reimbursement and allowing them to grow, and then letting the ones that are not so good, the ones that are very restrictive, the ones that are paying very low rates, and they go to the wayside. They'll terminate those and say, okay, I'll give up on those patients and I'll focus on the ones that I can continue to keep my doors open and the lights on and my equipment fresh and all that stuff and great and hire great therapists to help. And I think we're seeing more and more of that as we go along. So hopefully this will continue and we'll start seeing an improvement to the rates.
I think it'd be an interesting study to look at for therapy is, say, in the last 10 years with regards to the number of providers that kind of enter or leave contracts with payers. So what I mean is, again, if I'm wrong, then please do correct me, is I believe probably up to COVID, it's funny how we do pre and post COVID in the world, but up to COVID, I think there was I won't say a rush, but there was definitely a continued movement towards being in network by outpatient therapy providers, with the fear that if you weren't, the referrals would be cut off, stopped, and you would become an outcast. You wouldn't be able to participate with the majority of patient population. You'd become almost a niche clinic, an anomaly. And that has that's a real fear, isn't it? Because if you look at certain markets, so for instance, Pennsylvania, okay, UPMC has had a stranglehold on referral. And if you try and operate as an independent provider and you aren't in network in the geographical area of that entity, it's extremely difficult to operate based off limited patients available that are out of net, are outside of that payer. So I think there's a real fear. But as you say, I think that fear has passed the point now where that fear of not being able to access certain patient population is lessened, because the benefits of being in network, which is essentially getting certain patient population and securing a certain rate of reimbursement, those benefits are diminishing, certainly since COVID.
Yeah.
So I feel that, as you say, providers are beginning to say, you know what, enough's enough. I'm not going to accept these terms and conditions of being in network. I would rather either go without that patient, or I would rather treat them, you know, other patient population or in some other manner. Yes.
Yes, I agree. Yes, I think that it finally gets to a point where it's unsustainable, and you want to treat every patient out there, but you also need to keep your doors open and you need the lights on and pay your bills just like everybody else. And so I think that's finally coming to a head, and more providers are seeing the light in that regard.
I think this is really quite a sad place to be, because, you know, as a clinician, I want to treat everyone. Ideally, I'd like to treat everyone exactly the same way, but, you know, the basic economics of healthcare in the US doesn't allow that, let's be brutally honest. But I'd like at least to be able to give access, equal access. But the situation now is that is actually probably getting less and less, this idea of equality. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Most orthotic manufacturers take a one-shape-fits-all approach to solving lower body pain symptoms. They focus on arch support for temporary pain relief, which can lead to inefficiencies and injuries. BioCorrect does things differently. With 25 years of experience, BioCorrect knows that everyone has unique needs. BioCorrect is a fully customizable foot orthotic system engineered to address and treat the biomechanical imbalances of your entire body. BioCorrect, more than just an insert. To learn more, visit us at biocorrect.com.
Okay, so let's say a provider actually does want to get in network, which is really quite amusing, given the fact that probably a lot of providers are trying to get out of network at the moment. But let's say you want to get in network. How do you contract with a payer? What's the process? What's the mechanics of it?
Well, the very first step is to contact the payer and tell them, hey, I'd like to get a contract with you. And so that should start a dialogue with the payer. And a lot of times you can go online and submit a form and just say, you know, this is my NPI number, my tax ID number, the company name, and submit that. And you know, hopefully you'll get a response and they'll send you a contract to review. And then once you review the contract, find out what's not going to work for you, look for things that you can improve. Then you start the dialogue with the provider rep, and then hopefully come to a good resolution that's going to be favorable to you. And I guess in the perfect world, favorable to them as well. But certainly you need to look out for yourself first. So.
And this process, or the contracts are confidential, correct?
Correct, yeah. You're not allowed to share them outside of the two parties that are discussing them, yes.
So technically, if there could be an entity down the road that has a different terms and conditions for the same patient, correct?
That's correct, yes. Yeah, so it all depends on your ability to leverage your services, your talents, your brand to get the higher rates or more favorable contract language. But that's exactly right, that a patient choosing one provider over the other may not have anything to do with the contract and what they're allowed to be seen or how much it'll cost to see them.
Now, I would assume it depends on the payer, but as a provider and when you are seeking to get into network with a certain payer and they send along the copy of the contract for you to review and sign if one so wishes, is it basically a take it or leave it? Is it like a PDF and here it is? If you like it, sign it. Or if you don't like it, tough. Or is there some wiggle room basically?
Yeah, so I'm going to say there's always wiggle room, but it certainly does depend on the size and scope of the payer about how much wiggle room you're going to have in that negotiation. So if they're trying to enter a market, then your leverage is going to be such that you could be able to negotiate rates, negotiate favorable terms on the contract. But if they're already an established player in that market and they don't really need to add another one, then it might be a take it or leave it, and we really don't need you in here, but feel free to sign it if you want type deal.
So there's definitely a supply and demand question. You know, if the provider if the provider is one of many within a geographical area that's contracted with this payer, the likelihood of you getting a higher rate is probably less than if you were the only provider within 100 miles. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right. It gives you more leverage if you're one of the only providers of a service in any given market. Yes.
Now, one thing that I'm being constantly told for the last 5-10 years is the idea, well, you know, the payer will give you a higher rate, reimbursement rate, or more favorable to contract terms if you can demonstrate good clinical outcomes. Is that actually reality?
Well, I think that it certainly isn't reality. They want you to justify why you deserve an increase or why you deserve to be in network. But the funny part is that they already have all that data. They have claims scrubbers and they can look at those data analytics and see exactly how well the entire episode have occurred and how fast their members have gotten back using you as a provider versus your neighbor as a provider. And quite frankly, most outpatient therapy providers don't have access to that kind of data to look at their own. And if they did, they would only see their piece of that entire care that the patient went through from surgery to, you know, the functional outcome that you wanted. So they often will tell you, yes, you need to justify to us why we should give you an increased rate or why we should let you in this closed network. And it's just a very tough thing for an outpatient therapy provider to be able to provide anyway. So
I've never really thought of it that way. The idea that the payer has more information about the care than the provider, or certainly when you look at it across multiple providers.
Yep.
So I it's really quite amusing in a sad way, the fact that they're asking for justification, but they have all the information and much more than one could ever get already at their fingertips. So it's just, again, my cynicism is getting the better of me, but it's really just a ploy to try and push back.
Well, and what makes it even funnier is that there's a push for outcomes-based contracting and reimbursement structures. So they know the good providers out there. They also know the cheap providers out there. So if they send the care to a therapist that has agreed to lesser, and they're like, okay, well, the patient's not going to complain, so we'll just allow them to go there. It costs us less to have them provide the care, and no one's the wiser, and we're happy about that.
I think for, you know, the basic idea of contracting, I think we've covered quite a lot. One last question. So we've discussed today what is contracts, what are contracts, the difference of in and out of network, and perhaps the advantages, disadvantages for the providers and for patients. The idea of, you know, very high level, how you would start or initiate a request to a payer for getting it into network, even if it's open. Oftentimes you're told that it's closed anyway if they have a sufficient number of providers. Is there anything else that the audience need to understand about contracts, payer contracts at a very basic level? What haven't we talked about?
I think we did cover a lot of the things. But I think the key is that the key to provider contracts is that rates are the biggest piece of that, but it does restrict you. And so it's important to look at all of the clauses that are in there and making sure that the contracts make sense for the provider.
Thank you very much, Mark. I'm looking forward to the next episode where we'll perhaps dive a little bit more into payer contracts themselves, look into the detail. The devil is always in the detail, isn't it?
That is true.
So appreciate your time and chat soon.
Thanks, Richard.
This podcast was brought to you by Alliance Physical Therapy Partners. Want more expertise and information? Visit our website at alliancepTP.com and follow us on social media. You can find links below in the description. As always, thank you for listening.